Hello and welcome to another episode of the Golden Hour Podcast. I'm your host, David Altizer, with
Connor McCaskill and
do I say it?
Tyler Stallman.
We are joined again for the umpteenth time. I don't even know how many times we've had you on. You're a regular on the show, Tyler Stallman.
Never welcome. Enough. Yeah, thanks, welcome. Guys.
So I'm just pleased to have you on. We've tried to kind of do this on and off over the last couple months. You guys have just been traveling like crazy and then the holidays and everything. I mean, how has the last, 6 months been for you guys?
Yeah, it's been busy. We've been on the road a lot and we're about to be a lot more, which is good and bad. It's like, we just spent the last few weeks being very comfortable at home, and that like you get comfortable pretty quickly. And I kind of felt like I was able to reorganize my life a little and edit some photos and get some things done. And right now I'm just glad to have no huge projects right on the horizon. So we're heading on another trip soon and I don't have a lot of work to do on it, which is very rare. So I'm looking forward to maybe a vacation. We'll see if anything gets announced.
Whoa, it's never a vacation. Where are you going?
I don't want to jinx it. Yeah. We're going to Mexico.
Oh, okay.
Oh, hey.
So it might be a vacation. Hey. It's possible.
It could be. You go on to what side?
Well, totally new area. We're flying to Cancun, but then driving to, I'm forgetting the, okay. Every time I think of the word baklava first, and I know that's not it.
Baklava.
Bacalar.
Nope, that's a little
it's bacalar.
Dish. Bacalar.
Sorry. I had never heard of it until my wife was like, let's go to bacalar. I'm like, okay. So that's
what it sounds like. A Star Trek name.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's what I'm thinking. It looks nice. So I'll report back how it is.
Man, that's amazing. Yeah, well, this is, another episode of Black Shirt, White Guy, Tan Hat show, right?
I should put on over your headphones, but...
Connor's missing the glasses memo, but Tyler and I are on point on that front. Anyways, really excited to have you on. Tyler has a new product and we're going to talk all about it. And I'm really excited to kind of hear some of the behind the scenes about the product, the why behind it, and also kind of the story of how the whole thing came together. But first, now that it's been 4 or 5 months, you've had a Twitter video that got 7 million views and a couple of other shoots with the iPhone 15. I had a video that also kind of blew up for, at least for me, my little channel, talking about like the USB-C and the SD card, options. I don't know about you, but all three of us here have the iPhone 15 Pro. Tyler, tell us, like, as a professional and as somebody who uses it on a constant basis, how are you liking the iPhone 15 Pro?
I feel like during the keynote, a lot of the sort of normal public reaction was feeling like it was a bit of a bump. Like, I think the things that we are so excited about with it, that like we're probably going to speak to quite a bit, were a little bit buried headlines in the announcement. And a lot of even just normal people may not notice it as much as usual, right? Like, the things you'll notice on the iPhone 15, if you're upgrading, let's say from a 14, which I don't think anybody generally really upgrades year over year, but let's just for argument's sake, you'll notice the 22 megapixels that are in the main camera now. So every photo you take has more actual real resolution. You can see that it's a little bit sharper. It's not a game changer though. Like in a lot of ways you look at the images and they still look like a phone photo, right? Like we haven't ever made a jump that phone photos you can't tell anymore. We're still in that world where like the quality is incredible. Amazing HDR processing, the raw capabilities of the photography, like it's all as good as we could have hoped for, but you can still spot the difference, right? It doesn't look like a larger sensor. But what totally took us by surprise, and I've talked about endlessly at this point, is the ability to shoot log and ProRes in video. And this is a bit of a niche feature that I don't think most people should even explore. Like even after I hype it up for a while and I say how amazing it is, I think that if you're not somewhat versed in the filmmaking world, or if you're trying to shoot the first thing you've ever shot, maybe don't explore that because it'll be very challenging for you. But for anybody that is starting to work in a pro universe, the iPhone is now part of it. Like it plays with the big boys. It can be matched to you know, any cinema camera. Not that it'll look the same, just it can sit in an edit with other big cameras and not stand out as like, oh, that's the iPhone shot. And that's how it was last year. You know, even though I think iPhone's been leading for video for years now, mm-hmm. you could spot an iPhone shot in a regular TV show or commercial. And Absolutely. Now it's not going to be like that, which is really interesting.
Yeah, it's been really cool. And I don't know though. Like I tried using it as like a main camera, as like a YouTuber, you know, using it for just standard on a tripod, talking to the camera. And because there's no screen that flips around, like it's right. hard to see yourself and frame it. So I had like this weird little mirror contraption that I would stick on top of it. And then the issue of like, okay, I've got this like little MagSafe, SSD thing that I'm going to stick onto it, but now my tripod mount, the grip thing that I have for it, isn't able to mount on it properly. So there's a lot of accessories that I think are still needed to like really pull all this together. And
it's true.
Obviously I'm getting a little ahead of myself because you do have a bit of a solution for some of this, but
I have a solution for you in terms of if you're filming yourself, I have a great tip. The HDMI out of most adapters, I don't think I have one sitting around here, but like, you know how a lot of USB adapters just like have HDMI as like a thing that they send out, right?
Yeah.
So that if, you know, you could send it out of your computer is typically what it would be for. But now if you use that USB adapter coming out of your iPhone, so you're sending mm-hmm. the iPhone USB signal away from the phone, and then you plug an HDMI cable into that.
Yeah.
Then you adapt that HDMI back into a computer, right? Like I use the like Condor Blue little, it's like $30 cheap little like USB or HDMI to USB adapter.
Yeah.
Right. Now you can monitor yourself. You can live stream with your phone. And I wish I could like set it up for this so people could see the example, but it like once you're streaming in log with a LUT on it, all of a sudden your iPhone footage looks like normal good footage and you can be doing that with a live stream. So you can just monitor out of an iPhone the way you would with any other camera. You just need two adapters, but they're very standard adapters. Like it's nothing weird or super expensive. Normal USB to HDMI, then HDMI back to USB. And
but that's not a mobile solution. That's just like if you're sitting at your desk and using it as a camera.
Yeah, it's
solution.
For what you were saying. Yeah. Like if you're at home and you're like, oh, I just want to do some A-roll and I don't have a big camera around, you've got your monitor.
And I guess, we're all spoiled to have, you know, real cameras laying around. But if you are on a budget constraint and you just want to get started, everybody, you know, spends money on phones. It's something you use every day, you know, for directions, for taking pictures of your kids, messaging your friends, etc. So might as well put a little extra money into maybe some extra storage and getting the pro model and just letting that be your main, you know, YouTube camera if you're a YouTuber or a content creator. But the flip on that too is like we're a little spoiled. Again, coming from being just a solo content creator, whereas a lot of freelance filmmakers are, you know, I don't expect they can still walk onto a real set or a wedding or an event with an iPhone on a gimbal, right? Like, are we there yet?
Yeah, unless no. I mean, there's no you
make
sense.
A package.
Yeah, I mean, which I, you know, I've heard people talk about that, and I like that idea that if you're just getting started, especially like you don't need high rates for weddings. There's people that are offering wedding shoots. They're like, look, I'll just shoot everything on my phone and just give you everything I shot. And that's it. And the price is low for that. Like, let's say it's $1,000 or whatever. I don't know, but like lower than a photographer would film, but they're not a professional, right? They are just using a phone the whole time and you can shoot photos and videos. And I think about that. I'm like, if somebody's any good at using their phone, you could get amazing coverage of a wedding. Like it actually could be a really, really great way. And, you know, I've shot weddings and, like I've had issues when I was shooting my cousin's wedding who like, you know, this, I was doing this as my gift to him. I'm like, I'm going to give you a wedding video. Cause I think they're great to watch and then you won't have to pay for one. And just like in the middle of the ceremony, I've got like a small Sony on a Ronin, and the Ronin just like starts like totally glitching out, like like making sound. It's vibrating so hard. I'm like, yeah, come on, you know. And that's just to get like a steady, like it's not to get anything crazy. That kind of shot on an iPhone is trivial. Like you don't need anything. You don't need a gimbal. You can be just actually walking around with your phone, disturbing everything much less. Everything's much less at risk. You're not having to also charge the gimbal battery. Like shooting on an iPhone has so many advantages, and you might be able to actually document some situations better. So I think that's the case that I think the iPhone will be the most interesting for. It isn't shooting a cinematic film, like a, you know, or commercials that you want to look like.
Unless you're movies. Apple making a TV right, show sure, dedicated yes, on Apple TV Plus. Yeah.
But for anything that's telling the stories of reality, I mean, being able to get an iPhone into small places is really significant, right? I mean, it means that you are so much more discreet. You're drawing a lot less attention. The battery's going to last a lot longer. You have a big monitor built into it. It's stabilized already. And there is an intuitive...
Like the beautiful thing, in my opinion, about the Apple Log is it does maintain that small sensor, kind of wide angle iPhone look. Mm-hmm. But now we've got the Log with like the 10-bit and the dynamic range that we've always wanted. And the main thing, and you've talked about it at length and I've talked about it a lot as well, iPhones have always just had this crufty kind of plasticky thing that was going on. And even with Filmic Pro's Log profile that you had to pay for, there was still always this dynamic tone mapping going on in the background. And there was always just this kind of over sharpening HDR thing going on. And I talked to the Filmic Pro people at NAB one year, and they were like, we can't do anything about it. It's at like an API that only Apple has control of. We can't, like, we've tried to reverse engineer it. We just can't get beyond it. We've gone down the layers as much as we can, and like until they unlock that, we're kind of screwed. So now we've got a pure clean Log image, and that kind of iPhone look, like I could totally see a reality TV show being 100% shot on iPhones intentionally to have that iPhone look to feel more authentic. But you've got, like, you know, proper lighting, proper sets, you know, proper audio equipment and stuff, but like it's shot like a reality TV show on phones so that it has this kind of modern Gen Z vibe to it. You know what I mean? Like I could see something like that working well in a, like a, on a Netflix or something, you know?
I also just really appreciate that the LUT that is provided in Final Cut Pro brings it back to just looking like an iPhone. Like it doesn't look cinematic. Like if you just shoot a bunch of stuff in Log and regular mode and import it into Final Cut, it all just kind of looks the same at a glance.
It does.
The Log stuff doesn't stand out, which I think is 100% the right move, right? Like there's no, you don't have to be like, oh great, now I have to figure out how to match this to my other iPhone footage. Like, no, it already looks great just with reduced sharpening. But if you know what you're doing, now you can push it far.
Totally. Mm-hmm. And Connor, you had a wonderful video on your channel comparing it to the Osmo Pocket. And Tyler, I don't know if you've talked about that camera, but it sure did kind of blow up. I was just a little surprised by it because it just seemed, again, kind of like a little bit of a bump, and it had some cool features, but there's really like a ton of pent up demand for this product. And based off of the footage that I've seen, and then Connor, your review comparing the two, I think there is a case to be made for, like, if you're talking about portable, you know, mobile video, okay, well, for $500, you could also get the Osmo Pocket, and then you could buy like a base model iPhone 15 instead. Like, so where do you spend your money? Do you buy the Osmo Pocket, which has a built-in screen that you can do a proper selfie screen on, and it's got a gimbal built in, it's a 1-inch sensor. You know what I mean? So Connor, talk to us about your experience with the Osmo Pocket. And by the way, you just got back from Germany using it.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think for me, like one of the things about shooting with the iPhone, although the Log is great, I still don't like the fact that this is my personal phone and then also like shooting footage on it. That to me is still like a very awkward experience. I don't know how you feel about that, Stallman, but for me, I don't like that at all. So the Osmo Pocket is great because it kind of fills this need of a tiny little bring it with you isn't in the way camera, but it, you know, it is completely separate. So for me, that's great. But then again, I am walking around with a backpack everywhere I go. So like for someone who just wants to carry around one device, I could see why they would want just an iPhone. But I love this thing. It's really cool. The only complaint I'd have about it is that I do feel like I might break it one day, and that'll be sad because it is, I mean, it's a little gimbal. So it is technically fragile.
No, what you're saying makes sense. That I think there is a strong argument of separating the camera and phone. I've noticed there's a lot of advantages doing that with my drone because now I have the RC Pro controller for, and all of a sudden now the screen is built in with the bigger battery and you're not putting your phone on it. And that is just kind of a better way to operate. You know, I think if I could only have one as just like, what's my dedicated cameras, but is it dedicated iPhone 15 Pro or is it a dedicated Osmo, which obviously is a big price difference there, but I would choose the iPhone. Personally, and I also always prefer the iPhone over, like, DJI is making insane sensors. Like, I really do appreciate what they're contributing to the camera community, but the intelligence of Apple's HDR does bring it ahead in the end, in my opinion. There just are a lot of times that, like, the sky will just be quite blown out on a mid-sized DJI sensor. And it'll be 100% recovered on the iPhone in a natural way that, like, doesn't look like aggressive over processing. So
that's true. I mean, iPhone does have that magic sauce. And when I did compare them side by side, I was like, oh, the iPhone does feel like it has more dynamic range. It is like artificial, but it's there.
Yeah.
Even though I did feel like the Osmo Pocket image still kind of looked better, even though the dynamic range was less.
Well, it has more of that, like, natural tone mapping. It would look more like if you're shooting log on the iPhone, that it's not, you know, kind of doing the weird things that happen to shadows and highlights when there's a lot of processing going on.
And then my last thing I want to mention about iPhone 15 Pro for me is I personally am, you know, this is a very personal thing, but my wife and I just welcomed another baby into our life. So we've got amazing. Three boys. And it is crazy. Uncle Connor is loving it. He got to see Jonathan and
it's awesome.
He's a great baby. We are so blessed. He's healthy and good, and like he's quiet, he sleeps, he is just like the perfect
those sound like all the best things you could say about a baby.
He's like the perfect third child because it's like I've got the kind of I've got all three kind of personalities that you would expect. You know, you've got the kind of introverted, creative, my firstborn, my extroverted, loud and crazy secondborn, and then kind of a quiet, just like by the book third, you know what I mean? So like, I'm excited to see how he develops and stuff like that. But that being said, I'm just so blessed and excited to have the iPhone 15 Pro at this time because I've been turning on that Vision Pro button as often as I can. And I'm capturing so much Vision Pro content on the 15 Pro. And I have no idea what it's going to look like. The spatial video feature was released in beta a couple months ago. I was texting Tyler because I saw that he enabled it. And so I was like, all right, I'm switching over to the beta to get it. it's now in a full public release now. Have you had any time with the Vision Pro, and do you have any thoughts on spatial video? I know that they've showed it to some people through demos, and I don't know if you
know. I didn't get the demo. There's been, they've kind of been doing gradually like more and more events, and there'll be a bit of a, I mean, everything's a mystery with Apple. I never really know what's happening until it happens. But there's a complication that I'm in Canada and they're not really going to be sold in Canada at first. So I'm curious to find out what, you know, Canadian Apple.
Why not?
I'll go halfsies with you.
They're just only being sold in the US at first.
Come on down, so
it's nowhere else. Well, so yeah,
come hang out.
I'm thinking about it. You know, maybe that might be the answer.
You know, but, people at Apple, they send you stuff. They might give you a demo unit.
But I know the people at Canadian Apple, so we'll see. I don't know. Okay. I mean, either way, I'm gonna find a way to use one. Like, I'm not that worried about it. But I do think it's interesting that you've kind of like jumped right into it. I expect it will look really nice based on what everybody said, right? I mean, I've read everybody else's impressions.
that it does feel extremely immersive. You know, even once I have the Vision Pro, I definitely won't start. I wouldn't switch over to everything being in spatial video at first. I mean, this is without trying it. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't bother. Here's my predictions, right? This is like what I imagine.
You don't have kids yet. That's the thing is like, to well, me, you know, with a still, child, it's so the special. The
reviewing of it is like, is somewhat, is like an isolated
That's true.
Thing, right? I mean, I'm still, what I'm skeptical of is not the experience of like being inside of the Vision. I expect that will be incredibly immersive and really cool. I more think that the feeling of like being like going into VR, going into another world that only you are experiencing. You know, Apple's done everything they can to have you not feel cut off, like you're still able to interact with the world as much as possible, but it's still your experience and you're not sharing it with anybody.
$3,000 experience.
Yeah, and really that price will come down. You know, I'm not that worried about the price in the long run. But I think there could just be this wall. This wall of like how people want, how much they want to cut themselves off to be entertained. You know,
sure.
And then I even have a bit of a feeling of like, okay, let's say the Vision, the spatial cameras get much better, right? Like I'm sure they already have them available for the professional productions where it's capturing like 360 or 180 spatial, where it's, you know, proper 4K, 8K, and like it really, really feels like you're in the environment. And I even just think about it in the long run, I'm like, how much it'll be, I try to imagine like an elderly version of myself, like just living inside my 30-year-old body, like fully experiencing, I'm not 30, by the way, but in my younger body. And there's like something strange about it too. I'm like, I want to see it before I'm really sold that this is like the direction that media is going to go. You know, I try to be a tech skeptic at the same time as I love the latest. So
yeah, well, have you seen Wall-E? Because you know,
yeah, there you
go. Yeah, it worked in Wall-E. I mean, yeah, you know, everyone had a great time.
I mean, it was a happy ending, so
yeah.
And
when they took it off,
I don't know if you saw the Gurman report from like a couple weeks ago, but apparently the iPhone 16, there's already some ridiculous rumors, and we're very far ahead here, but one of the rumors is that they're going to add another button, a capture button,
right?
A physical hardware button down here now, below the lock screen, or the lock button, kind of down on the bottom, which is going to be the perfect spot for like a video record button. And they're going to call it the capture button.
So and, I only yeah, saw and- a hint of that, but I did sort of call that in my iPhone 15 review, where I was like, the action button hasn't been useful for me. I need it to be somewhere more convenient. So that could be interesting.
And this is the proper orientation to film, because the lens is on the top left rather than on the bottom, where your hand would potentially cover it. Yeah, exactly. And so having a dedicated button to just, and it's also forcing kind of normal people who are so used to filming in portrait mode, it's forcing them physically to hold
sideways. I don't agree. I think it's going to be fantastic in vertical in portrait mode because your thumb is right there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I think it's going to be great for absolutely everything.
For both.
Yeah. Okay. You're just always ready to go. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm all about adding buttons. Give me more buttons.
I can't wait for them to invent that button. They invent it too.
For sure. So we'll just have to wait and see. Maybe we can do a follow-up in a couple of months whenever you get some hands-on with the Vision Pro, and I would love to get some hands-on with one as well, but I don't know
how. Yeah, and you know what, what I'd say, like the biggest solutions we need in media, you know, and like especially this idea of like documenting family or important memories is management. I think people just have hundreds of thousands of photos on their phones that are possibly going to get lost because they literally only exist on their phones and they don't pay for an iCloud subscription and it's not backed up anywhere else. And, or people use Instagram or Facebook as a backup. I've known people tell me stories that their camera got stolen and the SD card was the only copy of all the years of photos.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. You know,
this is like the normal universe, right? Like we have backup solutions. We think about this. Like most people don't take any real action, and Honestly, photos are extremely vulnerable. So this year I printed like a blurb photo book of just like family album from 2023, which I kind of mean to do it every year, but this year I'd been throwing all the, like, my favorite family photos throughout the year. I'd just been throwing them in a Dropbox folder. So they're all just sitting there at the end. I'm like, you know, it would take me a couple hours to throw this together. And I did. And I'm so happy I printed it. And I anybody listening, I just really encourage, like, print more, find an excuse. Even if you just make a bunch of 4x6s and put them in a shoebox, like, find reasons to print something sometimes. Yeah. Definitely not everything you shoot, but just like a few meaningful photos a year goes a long way.
That was one of the beautiful side effects of, you know, when we were young, our parents used film cameras and they had to print it. And so we have all these physical photo albums. And obviously the problem with that with normal people is they would throw it in a shoebox under their bed and there'd, you know, be a fire and catch fire. And now they're all gone, or there's a flood and they're all ruined, or they just get yellowed over time and destroyed. So
I think that humans have had some, we have some advantages evolving to manage physical objects. And this argument's used sometimes for password management, of like, the old advice was like, never write your password down, right? Like, because somebody's going to find it and they're going to hack you. It's like, that's not really how you get hacked generally. And we're pretty good at keeping something safe just around us. Like, that's how we live, right? Like, there's objects and we're like, oh, I put it down and now I know where it is. And we can keep track of physical objects pretty well. And we're not evolved to keep track of digital objects. So sometimes when we think about like, oh, it's going to be crazy that our grandkids will be able to watch us growing up on our Instagram videos. And it's like, well, it's a pretty good chance they won't be able to access any of that, because it's just going to become digital rot. And unless you take some action to find a way to really preserve this, it may not be around. So I think it's worthwhile for everybody to think a bit about, like, find some of those important things and back them up into other mediums that are not based on electronics at all.
So digital rot, are you saying that you think Instagram in 50 years just won't be around or accessible or different?
I mean, yeah, it's just like the amount I have
clear out old accounts, you know, over time.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like, there'll be a point not that far from now where the majority of accounts on any platform will be deceased people, you know, like that's not that far off. And we kind of don't
Facebook
have
might be there.
Yeah.
Facebook's already dealing with that.
Yeah, right. I know. But I mean, there already are solutions to it, but they don't really handle the volume that there someday will be. And like, will your family be able to access that? Like, or your more distant family, like grandkids, will they know, you know, will Facebook exist? Some of these platforms definitely won't. Who knows which ones, but.
So we need to make VHS tapes of our videos.
Print them to film.
Of like all our YouTube videos too. We just have like a rack of VHS tapes.
Yeah.
Honestly,
and the
that'd
podcast
be kind of awesome.
On vinyl.
Yeah. Oh.
Oh my gosh.
That'd be fun, actually.
Yeah, dude, like a oh my gosh. Can you imagine if like one of the membership tiers of a podcast was you pay a fee and then every month you receive a vinyl copy of.
Joe Rogan could do that.
It has happened. I'm not inventing the idea of a podcast on vinyl, but
it has happened. Who is it?
Podcast CGP Grey had with, I don't know, the podcast's not running anymore, so I'm not thinking of it. Anyway, it's happened. Okay, well,
so let's go ahead and talk about the main topic of this podcast. You have a new product in collaboration with Condor Blue. That's kind of pretty crazy. Can you elaborate on it?
I mean, it's crazy for me too, because it's my first product. So, you know, anybody that's done this multiple times, maybe they're used to it, but I have never gone through this process before. And it is a heck of a journey to bring something physical into the universe. I'm really excited about it. So the goal was to create something that I would actually use. I've kind of been friends with the guys over at Condor for a while. You guys know they're just good people, like just super, they understand the camera universe and they're socially awesome, you know, just nice to hang out with, and they've been great to work with, and it just totally made sense to do something together. And we'd been spitballing ideas for a while, unsure of, you know, exactly what the project would be. And at some point it came around to the idea of making an iPhone clamp. And I have opinions about how people, I think the reality of how people use their iPhone versus how filmmaking companies typically treat the world of iPhone filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And a bit of the context here is that my wife, Anya, you know, forever, she's been in the more like fashion and travel influencing universe. So a lot of what we do, we're traveling to events for her that are with, you know, more like normal TikTok, Instagram people that aren't in the photo community, don't consider themselves photographers or filmmakers, but they take photos and filmmaking for a living. Like, this is their jobs. They shoot nonstop. You know, they have as many clips on their phone as I do, but they just don't think of themselves as filmmakers, right? And they don't buy that many accessories. And as we go to these events and I'm looking at everybody shooting, I'm like, absolutely nobody is shooting horizontally with their phone. And if somebody shoots horizontally, they typically are bringing out a bigger camera. I think, and I did a poll on Twitter because I was curious about this. And I thought it was interesting because actually most people, there's 2/3 said they usually shoot horizontally. And I think they're in similar situations to Dave, of that they're using their phone as their dad cam, their mom cam. It's kind of the like capturing life, and they want to be able to watch it back on a TV and a television's aspect ratio. But the reality of media consumption, which is, you know, social media platforms at this point, is like most people are watching things on TikTok and Instagram. That is all vertical. It's mostly shot on phones, and it's also mostly shot by professional creators. I'm doing the little finger quotes here. Like, it's not that it's like most of the content in anybody's feed is made by people that are doing it regularly. It's not your family and friends anymore, very much, right? Like, most uploads are coming from people that kind of do this as to be entertainers on the internet. So I wanted to create a product that was like targeted at that type of person. Like, I upload to Instagram and to TikTok regularly, or YouTube Shorts. I care about how my videos look. I'm trying to make them fantastic, but they're typically vertical. So this was the first, as far as we know, this is the first vertical first iPhone clamp. So you can turn it sideways if you want, but the whole point of it is that it prioritizes being mounted vertically, being used for as professional as you want social media content creation. So that's the idea. And it's called the Stallman clamp.
Wow. Very cool. How does it
Stallman clamp?
If you want, you can
very
watch
creative name.
I love it. Well, it's like the Mondo
Mondo Ties. Yeah.
Mondo Ties.
I mean,
or,
I think he has a better ring to it, but
yeah.
No, I love the Stallman clamp. Stallman.
No. Mondo Ties is goated.
Yeah, it's good.
No, Stallman clamp's good. But so the process of actually engineering it, was that mostly handled by the Condor Blue team, or did you have a lot of input, or were you just kind of like the idea guy? How was the involvement with you and Condor Blue specifically fabricating it?
Well, so I did, if anybody wants to go like obnoxiously deep on this, I had Brandon Peterson on my podcast the other day, and we just like talked about the whole thing because he was my main contact at Condor. Lucas is also amazing, who runs the company and, you know, helped facilitate all of this. And Brandon's one of their designers, and, you know, he's who I worked with the most on this. So it was, I mean, I don't know if they wanted to be less hands-on, and I just dragged them into having so many opinions that I was texting him 24/7. But it, you know, at first we really were just working towards like, let's just make a nice clamp, right? Like, let's just do it the way that I would want to carry it around. And so priorities for me, when I use one of the many clamps in my life, like we got a bunch of Amazon ones and just, you know, all sorts of random little clamps I picked up over the years, is that a huge thing is like, I hate having it on the actual phone. It bulks out the back tremendously, and you're not going to keep carrying it around with it. So like, you're always instantly taking it on and off. And they're also just generally just clunky. Like, they add a lot of kind of crazy, weird angles to it. So you wouldn't throw it in your bag still on the clamp. And all of that also means that a lot of it's like more, it's less secure. Like, it's easy to pull on and off, but then you can't pack it away. And then there's another style of clamp that's like a cage, right? So quite a few brands have this. Small Rig has them. I've talked about the Polar Pro one. And like, those are quite nice for building out a complete rig. But the problem is they make the phone so big, it's not a phone anymore. You can't put it in your pocket. You can't really like talk on the phone. It becomes like, okay, like you were saying, Connor, now your phone is your camera. It's like locked into camera mode, and you can't really use it as your phone anymore. So the idea of this is that you can still like move between those worlds. Like, while it's in the clamp, it is 100% secure, but it's still compact and like smooth enough that you can still throw in your pocket. You can kind of walk around and during the whole production comfortably fully keep it mounted and it's not interfering with anything.
That's awesome. And one of the things about obviously the 15 is the log, but for me, it's like at that point you have to have some sort of external storage solution. What does that look like with the clamp? Like right. how are you dealing with external storage with it? Or do you not use log and then you're just kind of like, that's not really an issue for me.
Yeah. I mean, in the videos that I, in my iPhone review, I used the Condor SSD clamp and put it on top of one of my Amazon clamps. And it was just a disgusting mess of, you know, like kind of a large hard drive that's half the size of the phone. And then the clamp is as big as the phone and it just was awful. You know, Dave did the legwork of testing out a lot of different cards and card readers and just like making sure everything can work. And it's yeah, amazing the versatility
that's what I've been doing.
Of what goes into there. Part of what I didn't like about any of the solutions I'd used up until now was the way that they like stick out of your phone and that they're very vulnerable all the time. Like the you know, Dave, you've kind of told me which of the little,
yeah, this what do you call guy. Them? Like
thumb drives? What's the name for that type of product?
A thumb drive. I don't even know. It's right? just a USB-C thumb drive.
Adapter? Is it
a thumb drive? I mean, this just goes straight in and there's no... It's just.
It is a thumb drive. Then it's just a USB-C one.
This is a 256 gig drive. It records
cool.
ProRes 4K. No issues. $25. So
yeah,
to me, this is the right.
How reliable
solution.
Is it for $25?
it seems to be working fine.
How is it at 60? Can it do ProRes 60?
Let me just tell you right now. Yeah, it can. I haven't done any like. Okay. Extensive Gerald Undone tests, right. but yeah. Yeah, I'll tell you.
I mean, yeah, if you're doing a big test, production, right. if this is like a commercial you're getting paid for, you might want to spend more than $25 on it.
Yeah, I wouldn't trust it for a real production like that. No, but I can go ProRes 4K 60. I'm recording right now 4K 60, and
let us know when it drops.
I'll just let it go. I'm just going to set it down.
Do it with. The Blackmagic app because it should report a dropped frame. Whereas if you're using the Apple app, I'm not sure if it'll. I don't know what it'll do if it drops a frame.
Do you use the Blackmagic app when you're filming in log, or do you just say screw it and use the normal one?
Well, yeah. So we did a pretty extensive like social campaign, which this is also part of it too. Is like a lot more of our commercial work has been focused on like this stuff. It's you know it's for brands, for companies, and it's like this is just going to be for social. So it's being shot vertical. It should look like it comes from a phone because it performs better than things shot on a bigger camera. And so for that stuff, I've been using All Blackmagic lately because you can lock in the exposure. You know you don't have to worry about anything shifting as you're shooting. You just have that full control, and it's. You know, those are the only things that bug me about the Apple camera app. I prefer the interface of it, but it auto white balance is kind of obnoxious and you just can't predict what it's going to do quite as much. So to me, Blackmagic's about like when you need that control. And there's also just, there's a bit more like flexibility. It's quite a few options you can dive into there. So
no, it's funny though. Oh, nice. It's funny though.
4K 60, no problem so far. So
great. When I shoot with my phone or even the Osmo Pocket, like I am using log now that it exists. But I definitely just put it in auto. Like, I don't know. I know that might be weird, but it's like, I think the advantage that this has over my camera is like, boop, it's ready to go. Right. And I know it is an automatic and I know it's going to do things that I don't super love. Like in my last video, you'll see like, you see some exposure changes because that's just some of the stuff was either on my iPhone or on the Osmo Pocket. And you do see the exposure changes, but it's kind of like, does it really matter? I mean, like we're making YouTube videos.
Yeah.
Does totally. It matter?
I think in normal life, like just like walking around sort of shooting documentary style, it doesn't matter. It's only in the, you know, the examples for me is like, okay, we're shooting indoors in a controlled lighting situation and we're going to have jump cuts from somebody's changing outfits.
Sure.
And we don't want any exposure or white balance changes between outfits. You know, like
I guess
that's not like a crazy matters. Technical. It's just, well, we don't want anything automatic, right? We don't want to leave anything to chance.
Well, and I guess also since you're doing fashion, color matters a lot.
It's got to be the right white balance.
Right. Okay. Fair.
And that's still totally missing from the Apple app.
I'm shooting 4K 60 ProRes HQ log in the Blackmagic app. It's running no problems.
Yeah,
$25, no, awesome. 256 gigs is the most you can get at the moment.
So we're all just paying too much for these SD cards. We're all being ripped off.
You don't need. You only need 200 megabit per second write speed.
Yeah.
So to me, what ends up mattering the most is the form factor of how it's mounted. And what I don't like about what you're using is the it just sticks out the bottom. Like it's very vulnerable. Like that is like waiting to be knocked off and you know like broken at the USB joint. Not that it's a bad product. It's just like just form factor wise, it's really exposed. So the part of the way that we designed around that is that the USB now mounts towards the front through a little 90 degree adapter. And since there are standard like quarter 20 screws on the front of it, now you can attach whatever you want there. You know, that can be various Condor products, which is what I showcased in my video about it, of either card readers or drives. But it can be absolutely anything that you run a USB into. You know, like you could run a little USB extension cable going into a smaller SSD or thumb drive like you were using there, Dave, and mount that flush to the back, which would also just be a little bit safer, right? Like I would like look for a way for everything to be flat into itself so that you don't have anything that's sticking out.
For sure. Yeah. I just,
makes sense.
I just love how tiny it is. You could easily get a little USB-C to USB-C little cable ribbon to like then mount it onto your mount, you know?
And you know what? That's what I think is like so important about a lot of the iPhone filmmaking. Not everybody, like there are reasons to kit it out and treat it like a real camera. I can imagine those scenarios. I think they're just more edge case than we treat them, right? Like because Small Rig makes Small Rig cages, they have an incentive to be like, well, here's a cage, right? Like we're going to sell you a cage. Yep. But is a cage actually what most people need most of the time? No, that's like a smaller market. I think there's like less people. Most people want to use a phone like a phone, right? Like kind of keep that portability true to itself, that it's not getting in your way. It's not slowing you down. It's not making it harder to shoot. I think if you're working with a phone, it's to make life easier. So I always want, even, you know, even having made this clamp, like I'm not going to just like put it on all the time for no reason, just because it looks cool. I'm going to, you know, like I'll often use my phone on its own and I'm going to add pieces as they need it. So I'll only rig this up exactly as much as it's useful. To me, that's either adding storage and or a microphone. Those are the big things. You could do ND filters and you can, I don't know, what else could you do? Time code. you could add a focus puller. I've seen it's compatible with the Nucleus. That stuff, it's like, it's not that it's not valid. It's that it's becomes more and more edge case of like, why is this something that you need to complicate your workflow? So big fan of like, try to make it as simple as you can and only add as you need those extra features.
And real-time follow-up, I was recording to the phone. So that's why it was working.
Wow, it works great.
Yeah, and so I was like, wow, this is so fast. So I made sure to switch it, and at 4K 60, I'm getting an alert that it's not fast enough. At 4K 24 ProRes log, no problems. It seems to be recording fine, but 4K 60 on the $25 thing.
Well, do another test while we're sitting here. Try switching it over to ProRes LT.
Okay.
And then also try switching it over to
the HEVC.
Yeah, because now that works. And by the way, since I did the test but never set it anywhere, you can see the difference. I was kind of hoping that like, if you shoot it in H.265, it'll look the same. Because that's how it is on, let's say, the Lumix, right? Like the colors are so close that there's not an important color difference. But I found recovering saturated highlights, you can see the difference.
Interesting.
So not everything. If you've got like a pretty normal image without any crazy dynamic range, you can capture in that much smaller file format. But if you have highlights to recover, you're going to do better in going to ProRes LT. I think most people should be using LT because like HQ is outrageously big.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. I'll do some tests. I'll follow up in a minute. So back to the actual mount. And I think you're right on it. There's so many professional, I wouldn't even call it, you know, content creators that are making videos every day, all day long on their phones, making millions of dollars, mind you.
Are we? Wow, this is, nobody told me.
Some of them.
Well, I'm talking about the kind of like upper echelon influencers that are getting tens of millions of views on a regular basis. But then again, there's people like yourself who are, you're actually filming proper commercial spec projects, and they're, the producers are asking for you to film on phones in vertical format, right? So there's just a huge, you know, there is a niche of filmmakers who need this, but then there's also the influencer types, the Emma Chamberlain, you know, types who are professional influencers, if you want to call it. It's such a cringe term to say that.
Whatever we call it, sure, yeah.
But
internet
like
internet painters.
I wonder if it'll kind of get up the chain to those types of people as well. Kind of like how our you know, mutual friend Caleb Wojcik created the Switch Pod, which, you know, now you watch MKBHD out and about, he's usually using a Switch Pod. Casey Neistat, I think, started using it towards the end of his career. And so that product, though it was made kind of by a filmmaker, you know, Caleb Wojcik, and then some of us who are friends with him promoted it or whatever in our little filmmaker bubble, it did kind of rise the level up to like Casey Neistat, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think there's a market too for not only nerds like us who are professional filmmakers making commercials. Like, I think this has a place for the kind of influencer crowd as well.
Yeah, that's my hope. I mean, those are the people that I interact with a lot of the time. Like, I've met so many of that influencer type of person, and like, they're just not that concerned about gear, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they know that I review camera gear, so they'll ask me questions about like, what should I use to make my stuff look better? But still, as they're going around in their day, they're really just using an iPhone. I mean, like, out of their pocket with like, I don't know, there's so much attention paid to like kitting out an iPhone, even the universe of adding lenses, like,
yeah,
there, you know, you can get a better image. Like, you know, Moment has done a great job, like creating that set of lenses. And if you use the 1X lens and put the macro on there or whatever, like that's the best image you'll probably get out of a phone compared to using the built-in ultra wide. But it's niche. I mean, that's like most people don't do that. That's not what you're watching on TikTok. That's not what everybody's doing all the time.
Well,
so to me, I mean, like, I want this to be the best way that somebody that does like street interviews all the time, they have a dead simple way to like stick a mic on the back, lock this down, and it's just totally reliable all day long. They don't have to question their gear. They don't have to think about the gear. It's just like, it's taken care of.
Yeah. And why would they think about the gear? Because or even the quality in a way, besides maybe audio, because if you're talking about TikTok, right, it's like you have 15 seconds. You don't even have 15 seconds. You have 3 seconds to entertain someone or they swipe away. So it's not a matter of how can I make the quality a certain, it's almost more of a shotgun method now. It's like, how much content can I possibly make? I'm talking generally. Obviously, there's different people who have different ways of doing it. But for a large portion of TikTok, it's how much content can I make as quickly as possible that is of a certain quality. Right. But again, they're not worried about like, oh, I should have a better lens on here or whatever else. They're just like, all right, we're going to film this.
Well, and that's the thing is they will use things that actually make a material difference. And microphones are the best example. That's why we see people holding little lav mics, because in some situations, not all, sometimes it's totally pointless, but in a lot of cases, like that's just the best way to get like really clear dialogue. You know, now the mic is close to you instead of the phone being across the room. You've made a huge improvement in what your audio sounds like, super minimal investment. Those mics are like $20. And it's way better. And that's why people use that thing, because it makes a real difference. I think if an accessory isn't actually improving their life, like, they're not going to put it on, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree. And I think that's why the clamp could be a really awesome thing, because it's just non-invasive, which is kind of what you want for all these people.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And what do you guys have kind of planned for the future of this product? Do you see it, you know, obviously,
so much.
What can you share? But like, do you see it kind of building out to having other accessories that can mount on it? Obviously, on the back of it, you've got some screws with the airy anti-twist kind of mm-hmm. system there. So
locking pins, yep.
Locking pins, yes. So you can actually use the Angel Bird and Condor Blue recently did a collaboration where you can use the SD card or CFast Express card slot, the polar opposite of this $25 SSD that you can just plug into your phone. But you know, if you're on a real proper set, I think it would make a ton of sense, especially if you're shooting on other cameras with that same media. You've got a DIT, you've got a team using a really rugged, well-built, you know, Angel Bird, Condor Blue collab, you know, card reader. It does make sense in that world. But I would love to see you build that out, you know, maybe give us some different hot shoe mounts or maybe a mount that could mount onto that rail that also gives me another, like a horizontal mounting point would be cool. So that way I do have literally two quarter 20s. I have the one that you, right. You know, put there, but then also maybe one here for those times where I do need horizontal to be easy to access. I would love to get my MagSafe back. So if you could almost like make a magnetic ring that goes onto it or something, right. It doesn't have to actually charge the phone. It doesn't necessarily have to be a pass through, but just a magnet that's a circle. Mm-hmm. That way I can mount other things to it, in the MagSafe world. I mean, do you have any ideas like that?
Well, so, you know, in the end, this specific product is a collaboration between myself and Condor Blue, and they already, I mean, their range of products can cover a bunch of the specific things that you were talking about. So okay. I tried to show a few of them in my video. And if you kind of like pause and take a closer look at all the different accessories, you know, I was able to build it up pretty nicely by adding a NATO rail to the back, like just a totally standard mm-hmm. mounting point that now you can add things going off in both directions. All I'll hint at, which this is going to be up to, this won't be part of our collaboration. I know they have something in the works that will take care of quite a few of these problems at the same time.
Okay.
And that's all I can say about it. And cool. But that won't be my product. I know like this whole time we're like, oh man, wouldn't it be great if, and a lot of those wouldn't be greats will happen someday.
So this is just, This is simple. What we're looking at right now is like, this is the base. This is like, if you just want to get started, but we may end up seeing a modular system over time that.
Yeah. Well, and because it's Condor Blue, you know, we really approached it from like the modularity already exists, right? Like, yeah. And hey, I don't work for Condor Blue. So I can also say like, you can add all your small rig stuff, you know, if you've got a tangerine, sure. Like it's going to fit on there. It's all going to play nicely together. There's nothing. And even, you know, something that drives me crazy is like DJI's, Arca Swiss plates are kind of weird ratios. Like I've had some plates that do not mount into each other. And Condor Blue is very thoughtful and sort of sensitive to what those compatibilities are and making sure that, like, obviously DJI is very widely used so that it works with that as well as, sort of standard plate mounts. So, you know, that universe is already out there for people that are just starting with iPhone. Like now they can start discovering like, oh, what is a NATO rail? You know, what is a sure. quarter 20? Like all these things that can kind of, they can be introduced to the idea of rigging. But I still think in the end, like most people are going to only add the few accessories they need. You know, it's like, and that might be a totally different set for everybody, but that like you just put a few things on those key points, whether it's storage or an additional grip or audio that you need to expand. And you'll probably keep it at that. I don't think that it's, you know, when I first bought my 5D Mark II, yeah, that was the first video one, right? Yep. I started rigging it up like right away. I bought all this Zacuto gear. You know, I went to NAB and I saw like the demo rigs they had for the camera, and like it looks beautiful once you rig it up. It's so nice. And so I bought a lot of stuff very early on that is still sitting in my gearbox, and turns out I don't shoulder mount very often, and you know, I get in need all these rails that like they're still part of Universal Systems, so I can still use them, but it's not how I use my camera. So whatever it is you're buying, whether it's, you know, this mount or accessories, like you don't think you need to have the kit like it looks like on set. Like find the tools that really are useful to how you shoot and you know, invest in the good version of that, and it's probably going to carry you a pretty long way.
For sure. And my final question is, how's the clamping? Like, I would imagine that's nerdy things that took you guys a lot of time to figure out, the tension and like the right amount of tension. Like, do you feel, I mean, I would imagine, but I'm just going to ask for the sake of asking, is the phone going to fall out?
Oh, I mean, okay. Well, it is the most, I'm not saying this because it has my name on it. It's the most stable clamp I've used. The ones I have are a prototype that we have a few changes coming. So based on, you know, once we, they tried a bunch of different springs before I got my versions, and the springs we have in this, we want to tighten them up just a little. And we've done some things so that there's no rattle. Sometimes this like can shift a little. So that should be completely cleaned up in the very final version. But that tension is, the thing is, like, other clamps, actually I have another clamp right here, typically are like narrower, and they're going to grab your phone at a smaller contact point. So first of all, we made sure to have a very wide contact point so that like it's gripping a large area of the phone. And then, yeah, having the amount of tension, really key. Testing with different cases, making sure that they all grab on so you don't have to buy our special case for it to work. That was all really important. But what kind of became the magic ingredient eventually is that USB contact point in the bottom. Oh, yeah. Because it's plugged in now, like, it just really is like it. I never had any point where I could shake it out. Like, I couldn't.
Oh, wow.
And if I mean,
that's right, a good point. It's literally plugged into it. So it's as if you screwed a screw into the bottom of it in a way.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. And I mean, like, if you can see this like standard clamp, like, I mean, the most clamps are not that tight. And they're sort of expecting you not to worry about it. It's like, okay, like your phone can sit there safely on the tripod. It won't fall off the tripod, but there's play in it, right? Like, it has the ability to wiggle within that clamp grip. And so it was important to me that there's no play on this. So like, if you hit the record button, you're not going to get like a shift as you press. Like, if this is screwed into a tripod, it's completely secure.
The best clamp I've ever used, I think, is maybe Joby. And it has a little tab on it. You unlock it and then oh my gosh, did you see what just happened?
Just stupid
Apple, freaking.
Mine are turned off. Why are mine doing it?
Well, you have it turned off anyways, but yeah.
Are you guys both recording on iPhones? I mean, I know you are, Tyler.
No, it's built into Apple's new OS. Yeah,
any camera when it's going through the OS. There it is. Connor's got it.
Wow. What do you know?
Yeah.
Well, let's do another. No, never mind.
Yeah, pieces, the balloons, and then I think, is this one the rock and roll one?
I don't know. Yeah. Where did mine go? Oh, nice.
Wow. This is great. That's
for the audio. Your listeners are going to love this.
Audio listeners, love you to death. Check out the video.
But yeah, the Joby one, I really, I like how they designed it where like you unlock it and it like is free and it has a little bit of spring tension, but then you kind of manually kind of push it down to where it should be. And then when you lock it, it gives it that extra little millimeter tightening. So it kind of like, as you lock it, it sort of like there's a gear that pulls it down slightly, so it just gets a really tight grip on it. That seemed to be the best solution, and I feel like you with Condor Blue, maybe something like I almost would imagine them to have like a hex, you know, key.
That'd be annoying.
That would be annoying, wouldn't it?
We did talk
about a lock or something.
We went through designs that had press locks in it, because like that other one I was holding up a minute ago, like this does have a little lock lever. It's just like every decision along the way takes up pieces internally, builds out bulk, becomes a catch point that's going to get stuck in your pocket. And it was just in the end, this balance of compromise that like, we're just like, I mean, most of all, that it didn't end up needing it, fortunately.
I mean, since like you have the USB-C, it would be unnecessary to have a lock, right? Because it's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I think it's as secure as it can be. The only thing maybe short of like, maybe I wouldn't mount it on a car. I don't know if like vibrations eventually.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I'm not. I gonna wouldn't mount my phone that, on a car.
I think that's where the Beast Grip kind of massive cage that's like the one that Apple used in their keynote. That's kind of a big old cage Like that's where that would come into play. This is a different product.
Would you guys mount your phone, your personal phone, even in a B-script on a car? Would you feel comfortable? Your personal phone?
Sure. Being,
yeah, no, I, mean, I wouldn't.
Yeah. With a Rhino mount or something? Yeah,
sure.
No, no way. Too many variables.
I mounted my phone on your trunk, Connor, and it worked well for me.
Your phone.
I think Sebastian DeWitt posted about this, but like I've seen people mount to motorcycles and vibrations that are too fast of a frequency can destroy the stabilization mechanism.
Ooh, yeah.
So like, cause it's trying to stabilize as you go. And if it's like working against a similar rhythm of vibration can break your phone. So,
So maybe stay away from
that's from hard mounting it to, I think a car doesn't vibrate in the same way. Sure. Just like be aware of, make sure you have some suspension, I guess.
For sure.
Noted.
Cool.
But I think that's more motor vibration, right? It's not like the road is so, I don't ride a motorcycle, but yeah, I don't think the actual street is that bumpy.
You don't ride a motorcycle? Come on.
No, well, I will just so I can start testing it on there.
There you go.
Well, everybody go check it out. And there is, if you're still listening to it, and I don't know if it's still happening, but there was a contest to actually win a Stallman mount on Instagram. So go follow Tyler.
No, win a Stallman clamp and an iPhone 15 Pro.
Exactly. I know.
Whoa.
Do you want to know you want to hear a funny story?
Yeah.
I do all their thumbnails and I do some YouTube consulting for Condor. And I told them, I was like, you should give away the phone too. Cause like not everybody has an iPhone 15. And
yeah.
Lucas was like, shoot, that's a really good idea. So
nice.
I was kind of joking, but I was like, you guys really should just give away a phone too.
I think
go get an iPhone 15 Pro and a mount. And I think it's on your Instagram, right? And on
Condor Blue. It's on either ours or Condor Blue.
Very cool. So yeah, we're stoked. We're good friends with, you know, full disclosure, we are friends with Condor Blue,
and each other.
And so, but all that being said, I am very excited for you, Tyler, as a friend. And like, this seems like it was a ton of work. And I think it came out great. It's so simple and clean, which is totally your vibe. And I can see it being used on set. I could see it being used by a lot of people ranging from influencer types, like you said, all the way to professional filmmakers. Maybe even Apple themselves will use it. Who knows?
So that'd be awesome. Crazy.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Yeah. I mean, I hope so. That we did look at what Apple Store box design looks like. We're like, let's make sure that if we ever end up there, we would fit in. So
there you
we'll see.
There you go.
Yeah. Before you know it, you'll be changing the colorways to match whatever color phone is the new color each year.
With any luck.
So, but yeah, that's exciting stuff, man. So Connor does have some news to share. I don't know if you heard or saw, but he, tell him about the camera.
I didn't see.
Oh, okay. We're going to continue. I thought maybe we were going to wrap up. We're at an hour.
Well, this is after show. Yeah.
After dark.
Just quick.
This is the post show. Yeah. I mean,
if you have a heart out, we can end it.
No, I don't. Oh, Tyler.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't. I'm fine.
Connor. I know you don't, Connor. Come on.
Hey.
Hey, I got this whiskey over here. It's calling my name.
No, I already drank it.
There you go.
Yeah. I already drank it. So, I mean, just real quick, I just posted a video recently. I switched to Sony. Wow.
Whoa.
It's so cool. Look at this cool camera.
Three Canon boys struggling to stay alive.
I at the end of my video, I basically say that. I'm like, sorry, Canon. I tried holding out. It's like, but I'm just over it. I'm over all the bullshit.
Yeah.
It's like, they're taking too long to give us the features they should have been giving us already. They could fix that. They could even fix it really soon with the R5 Mark II.
I mean, I don't blame you at all,
but
I get it.
But for me, I mean, you know, and I there's a lot of like comments where people are like, yeah, I have the R6 Mark II. I have the R5. I still like it. I'm like, that's great. Like, keep it, rock it. If you got a bunch of lenses, especially, I totally understand. But for me, it was just like, I don't know. I'm over it.
And I think that brings up the overall conversation too. I mean, I'm sitting here with a Lumix S5 2, you know, as my webcam. I think Connor, are you using yours as well right now?
Yeah, S5 2X is being used.
You've got yours, Tyler. You just released a really awesome video, kind of going over baking in your look in Lumix cameras in particular,
which is really cool.
Yeah, I mean, what are your thoughts now that you've had, you know, kind of a year with the S5 II? I can't believe that it's been a year since they announced it, and they haven't done anything else other than the G9 II, which is really just kind of, it's, I don't know. It's interesting. I do like Micro Four Thirds.
Did you try the G9 II?
Yep. Connor got one, and he let me borrow it, and I really liked it because I'm a Micro Four Thirds nerd, but I wish it was more of a proper Micro Four Thirds camera rather than just like a Frankenstein with
the S5 2X with a smaller mount, basically.
I'm stoked that they did it because now you can get a Micro Four Thirds camera with phase detect if that's something that you need. Well, so
anybody looking for an overhead camera, this is what I'll say. Like, this is a very specific recommendation, but the G9 II to me is just the best overhead camera. Because you don't need any shallow depth of field. Things should be in focus with an overhead. And now you're going to have all of the image quality of anything else. You don't need high ISO for that. You need autofocus and quality, you know? And it's got it in spades. Well, so
and you can do the 4x3 anamorphic shooting or 3x2.
And so now you can post it to social. And I mean, it's really, really great for that. So if anybody's looking for a camera for that specific use, which like they didn't market it for, but I'm like, no, it's perfect for that.
So like
they marketed it for bird photographers.
Yeah.
So it's just a weird thing though, because hold on, get your buckets. I'm about to name drop here, but Curtis Connor is a client that I've been working with, and he shoots everything on the GH5 still. And I was talking to him. I was like, you should really look into like the G9 too, because like he has it on autofocus, and you can see the pulsing going on in the back. But he just doesn't care. He honestly is kind of on the edge of filmmaker / influencer type, because he definitely knows what he's doing, but kind of doesn't really care at the end of the day either, because it just works, he has it set up, whatever. But he did say, yeah, I would like to have better autofocus. So I was like going to send him a link to the G9 II, and then I was like, wait a minute, let me just look how much the S5 II is, and it's $100 cheaper to buy the S5 II.
Yeah,
it's $1,750 at the moment. And the GA9 II is $1,899 or something. And I was like, there's no way in heck I would like say for less money, you can buy a full frame camera. I think it's kind of a no brainer. So I ended up sending him a link to the S5 II with the kit lens, the 20-60. And I think he's like, this is a Christmas present to myself. Because I was initially like, if you own a bunch of Micro Four Thirds lenses, just buy that. You don't have to buy any new lenses. But I was like, I don't think I would recommend it though for the same price, actually less money. So
yeah, I mean, I don't pull it out.
It would have worked.
Yeah. Yeah. It depends if you're into that look. I mean, like if he's really used to there being depth of field and kind of relies on it, then maybe. But you know, in my use of all this, which like every time I talk about it, I feel like there's a little hitch in it because Lumix, Panasonic has been very generous with their loaner program. So I've been able to access these cameras and lenses for, you know, like you say, like a year now, didn't have to pay for them. So like, that's pretty exceptional. At the same time, like I said, I'm about to pack for another trip and I'm looking at my cameras and I'm probably bringing the Lumix over my R5 or my C70 because the Canons are way bigger. The R5 is not a good hybrid camera. I don't like shooting video on it. I don't like the way the video looks at all. And it's bigger for that worse video quality. So to me, like Canon still got it for the C70, like in the price range and that type of like mid-high-end video camera, I think C70 is still the best choice, but it's the only Canon that is like the best of its.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's not the only. It's just like, I don't like the hybrids, you know?
Well, the FX6, I think some people would argue is better than the
C70. That's an awkward size. I do like the C70.
I way prefer the C70.
Me too. The fact that it's an RF mount with a crop sensor and they don't have any pro crop lenses is really frustrating. Oh, yeah,
I never
Sorry. I never even think about that it's cropped because I just keep the adapter on.
Same. Yeah.
All of the time. I literally forget
that.
But yes,
you're right. I've heard rumors that the C70 sold really well and they are working on a really great replacement. Excuse me. Imagine a C70 with all the issues resolved, SDI, the screen being fixed, maybe even an EVF would be nice, but similar.
They're talking about
full frame.
They're talking about a removable EVF, kind of like the GFX 2.
Okay. 100K. I haven't heard that. That'd be cool. But just simply a better screen, that screen is so floppy and weird. But it just needs to be better. And then full frame. And then that way you could just invest in RF glass and just go native and you don't need the adapter. But honestly, I feel like I've moved on a bit from the dedicated cinema camera because the S5 is so good. And Connor having the A7 R5, fantastic hybrid camera. These hybrid cameras have just gotten better and better. The A9 II is really exciting to me too. If I were in the Sony ecosystem, I would be stoked about the A9. Or the A9 III, with the global shutter. I just think that's so cool.
A lot of people in the comments, a few people were saying that this was a really odd choice for me because I'm coming at it from more of a video perspective, and they're like, "Oh, this camera has really bad rolling shutter, or like other issues." I think it does have rolling shutter, like bad rolling shutter if you shoot 8K. But I'm just not messing with 8K. Although
Just never been at the top of my list of concerns.
No.
You have to shoot a certain way for it to become distracting, and I don't shoot that way.
Yeah, I don't know. It was very interesting because you read those comments, and they're like, camera has bad rolling shutter, therefore it's trash, never going to buy it. I'm like, dude, the camera's sick. It's like really dope camera, so I don't know. I don't see that being an issue, but I like it so far. There's still some things, though. I'm still not the biggest fan of this part of the Sony.
Well, the whole physical body of the Sony,
it's not my favorite.
I that's what I like the least is actually just like the physicality of Sony. Like,
yeah,
they're not that beautiful. They don't feel that nice. They take a while to learn. But in terms of specs and then image quality, like they deliver 100%. And I do think I've said this on my show too, though. I think they're better than what Lumix is doing. Like, we're just looking at like, what's the best hybrid video camera, hybrid photo video. You'll find it in a Sony. Like, you're probably using it right now. But the price difference is pretty significant. So that's what makes it easy to recommend the Lumix. It's just so affordable,
I still love my Lumix. Like, if I was recommending one camera to people that in like a just a hybrid basic camera, it would be the Lumix still.
Yeah.
The S5 II or the X.
I don't know. The FX30 is great. It's cheap too.
That's another great choice.
But would you use it for photos?
You wouldn't. It's like not a great
hybrid camera. Yeah, if you're one of our nerdy selves where you just need to take a thumbnail picture every once in a while, then yeah, but
right.
I guess not for filmmakers, I guess.
And that's not true.
And then don't forget about Fuji. They're out there.
Here's the thing I don't like about it though, is that it's so big. The FX30 is just that it's so large and a smaller sensor, which doesn't make it.
You think the camera is, that's the G9 big?
Exactly. Yeah. I also don't like that about the G9 too.
You think the FX30 is a big camera?
It's the FX3 size. It's just, yeah.
Yeah, it's just the same size as a full frame. It's like, I should get some tiny advantage for having a...
You got an advantage. You got cost savings is what you got.
And the advantage from a weight saving perspective is you can use native APS-C lenses that are genuinely smaller. So
yeah, that's true.
And then one last thing I want to talk about in the after show. You brought it up on your most recent show with a mutual friend of the show, Jordan Drake, amazing human. I love your annual gear of the year.
Ninth annual
video.
Somehow.
It's incredible. I love it. Don't stop. Please do not stop. Do it every year.
At least make it to 10.
Yeah, at least to 10. that's crazy. 9 years. Holy crap. I just realized how significant that is. That's amazing.
Yeah. Spanned across two podcasts and he's been on three different YouTube channels in that time.
Almost as many as me. but
no one can compete with you, Dave,
but, generative fill and just AI art. I feel like my hands have been in it a lot in the last 5 months, just in this thumbnail journey that I've been on. And I've found even some new tools that I just started using the last 2 months. Just AI art in general, it's just been so exciting. And I couldn't agree more with your overall sentiment on the topic in your podcast, because if it weren't for generative fill and the power that it provides in Photoshop, I would not be doing this whole thumbnail career that I've been doing. And I think now it's enabled people to really learn how to actually use Photoshop. It's not as daunting. It's not as overwhelming, because if you're taking, you know, if you have an image and you're slapping another image on top of it and it's different lighting and a different scenario, now with the neural filters and then the generative fill on the edges, you can start to blend things together and make it look like a real professional composite. And then, of course, you know, being able to remove things or extend the frame if you have kind of a cropped in shot and you need to kind of zoom out technically, now you can do that. I mean, it's just one of the most powerful advancements, and I just don't want anybody to kind of overlook how amazing this is. And if you've ever like avoided Photoshop because it just seems overwhelming, I think now is a great time to really just pick it up and start learning it and messing around with generative fill. Because I've found if you can kind of imagine something, you might have to noodle around and do some experimentation, but like now I can almost like visualize things in my mind and type out the generative, you know, requests and somewhat get what I'm seeing in my head. And then add to that now ChatGPT-4 with DALL-E built into it. I work better with DALL-E with ChatGPT with my ideation for thumbnails. So I'll actually give ChatGPT like a full synopsis on the creator I'm working with, on the video that we're doing, kind of this overall style and tone that I want to convey with the thumbnail, and then where the point of focus should be. And then it'll spit out some like mock-ups. And I've been super inspired by that as a way to kind of ideate and kind of come up with concepts that I then use essentially as a mock-up to show to a creator and say, hey, here's like three or four mock-ups that I threw together with AI. Do any of these look good to you? And then we'll be like, yeah, we'll do that. And then now we've literally got like a storyboard that we can work off of to then build the real thumbnail. So I don't know. I just think it's so powerful. And for me, it's changed my life just the last 5 months. I'm a full-time thumbnail artist now, which is so weird, but I love it. It's been a lot of fun.
What's driving me crazy is that like the best generative tools, especially being Midjourney and DALL-E, they don't interact with those same use cases as Photoshop at this point. And even Adobe has Firefly 2, which is good. It's not as good as Midjourney, but none of that can be inserted into the photo you've already taken, unless I'm missing some in painting feature that you're aware of. But it's just so like there's these like parallel races happening where like Photoshop's becoming more and more useful, but it's still dumb at the actual generation. Like it isn't great at creating the things inside the image compared to how far along we've come with everything else. And I just don't know why. Like, why can't the others let me in paint into my photo is the first strange thing. Because they do have it. They all have in painting, as far as I know, or expansion, but they can only do it to an image they generated. And then inside of Photoshop, like, you can do it to anything, but it's not very good. So I think this will all be resolved by next
just
year.
Just wait a year.
Sure, but
either a couple months or a year.
I was going to say probably less than a year.
But yeah, I mean, it is kind of weird because like I shared on Twitter how much I'm paying for all this crap. Like I'm paying, I think like $80 a month total for all the AI stuff. And then I'm sort of include like, and the cheapest product that I pay for is Photoshop. So like the $9 a month that I pay for the photo bundle, which is all I use because I use Final Cut for video. The $9 a month plan is good enough for me because all I need is Lightroom and Photoshop. But then like Midjourney is like $11 a month. ChatGPT is $20 a month. Magnific is what I've been using quite a bit as well. That's $40 a month. So it's
what do
like,
you use it for? Like I know Magnific, I've seen what it does and it's cool, but like, why is it so useful to you?
Well, I'm still debating on whether or not it's one of those things, unfortunately, that once you've used it and seen what it can do, it's like, I really like it, but I don't know if it's worth $40, to be honest. But it's just that little extra sweet sauce. It's just that little extra like oomph. It really takes,
do you especially apply it to the final image, like to everything when it's done, or are you upsizing elements that you're putting into the thumbnail?
Yeah, I'll use Midjourney or ChatGPT to create assets that I then will, you know, use in Photoshop. But before I bring it into Photoshop, I throw it through Magnific, and it's really amazing. It's hard to even describe this. It's an app called Magnific AI, and it's using AI on top of generated AI that you're inputting into it. And it's like on a pixel for pixel basis, replacing each image with, or each pixel with like a real, like a very real sharp, crisp representation of what's underneath that pixel. And so if you were to stack whatever Magnific like spits out on top of what you inputted, and you would turn it on and off, it would look exactly the same. Like the composition's the exact same. Every I saw frame
create like an infinite zoom into a piece of steak that was generated in Midjourney, and then it's like you just keep creating more detail, and it's generating it. Because I've seen some people like say, "Look at this upscaling," and it's just 100% not upscaling. Like that's not. It's not.
Yeah,
it's inventing detail that never. Exactly. It's creating a new fake image. So as you push it harder and harder, it's less and less real, but it's amazing, the results.
Yeah. And then because some of the creators I'm working with, like react to low quality TikToks a lot, I'll pull a screenshot from the 480p TikTok that they're reacting to and use Magnific to then essentially use AI to enhance, in quotations, that image. It's kind of like the first time that I've ever seen anything that is sort of like Hollywood enhance mode, where it's like, zoom in on that image, enhance it.
I mean, you know? It is that, but the crazy thing is it's inventing it, which we never, exactly. That's not how we expected
it. We never would have thought it to be that. And I will say with people's faces, it is disturbing what it can do. In fact, I did a thumbnail for Condor Blue with for your product. And I inputted your face and everything. I'll put it on screen right now, but it's like this weird, it's like a weird version of you that is so funny. I'll text it to you here in a second. It just looks so wrong and weird, but I just erased the facial, the pieces of your face that look wrong, and used your real face. But then I used the detail in your beard and your hair that it pulled out and really made it pop. So it's right. Great for crazy. That, but like the actual image itself looks like so uncanny valley kind of. So, but I mean, yeah. Do you have any thoughts on AI art that you wanted to share or anything? But
I just wanted to get useful. I canceled my ChatGPT subscription. I canceled my Midjourney subscription because I was just goofing around all the time. So, and you know, like in my recent thumbnails, I was using Firefly 2, which is included in the Adobe subscription, was enough for like, you know, in that I was like, I want an award that is in the shape of a camera. Great. It worked, you know, looked good. Kind of looks like Midjourney 4 or 5, you know,
that's a good point. It's
behind, but it's like, it's included and will do good enough for a lot of things. And that's not what we see in generative fill. For some reason, it's a different version. Oh, wow. I look ancient.
Yeah. It's just you in like 25 years.
It enhanced your wrinkles. Yeah.
So. Very strange. Yeah. And cool.
You look like you could
like Norman Rockwell painting.
Yeah. If you take off your glasses and put on a cowboy hat, you could be in a Western film.
I'm terrified.
But I don't know if did you see my tweet where I took an image of the Fellowship of the Ring and replaced the faces with Casey Neistat's face? Did you see that?
Yeah.
No.
It's good. It's good.
So I said, yeah, the Lord of the Rings, but Casey, and he retweeted it. And so it got like 500,000 views on Twitter. But I used Magnific to create it. So you can, Magnific also has prompting. So you can also, in addition to upscaling it, you can tell it what you want it to do. So in that case, it enhanced a low res screenshot of the Fellowship of the Ring. And then I said, replace all the faces with Casey Neistat's face. And it, you know, it just did it.
So, I don't understand how it was generating his face.
His face because he's famous.
Yeah. Okay. So it has the generation built in as well. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool. It's interesting, but it's definitely not worth $40, but because I'm in this weird zone where I'm building my new career as a thumbnail artist and people kind of like the fact that when I deliver a thumbnail, they just have no idea how and what I'm doing. They're just why is this? This is like magic. How did you get this to look good? And I'm like, I just got some cool AI tools. They cost me $80 a month. But
it looks awesome.
Anyways, well, as always, such a pleasure, Tyler Stallman, to have you on the show. We got to get you to Nashville. We talk about it all the time, but you and Anya would love it. You guys would totally fit in here.
Maybe
you
this is the year.
Oh yeah, that'd be awesome. We'd love to have you visit anytime. Everybody go check out Stallman on YouTube at Stallman. Love what you're doing. You've got your podcast on the same channel now, so you don't have to subscribe to two channels if you want all the Stallman. Go follow him on Instagram. Check out the contest if it's still going at the time of this recording. It is, but maybe in the future when you're watching this.
People are going to be listening to this episode for decades, so.
For sure. And congrats.
Comment if you're here 10 years later.
Yeah. Congratulations again on the product. I think it turned out great. I can't wait to get my hands on one. I personally don't have one yet. I would love to get a unit whenever you guys get those fixed with the springs and whatever, but can't wait to give it a try, give it a go. So it looks awesome.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys. Good to see you again.